Hello again. It's Christopher Bolin. It's a nice Saturday afternoon, and it's the 27th of October. This is the second audio file we're putting together. Here with Helya Koska, my wife.
Hello.
We're trying to break it up into segments of about 15 minutes or so. Now we're going to turn to a new subject, an old subject, really. And that's the U.S. attack on the USS Liberty, which occurred in the June 8th, 1967. I think it was day four of the Six-Day War, they called it. Now, this is a subject, you know, in 1994 when the Estonia sank, and when I saw how the Swedish government was covering up the sinking of this ship in which 852 people died.
And 500 of their own citizens died.
And I, at the cathedral where the king and queen were in the memorial service, I saw an old friend from the police department, and he told me that 40 police from the Swedish Academy, the Swedish military or police academy, had been on that ship. And I thought, well, for sure, then this will be solved.
He wasn't really a friend. He was just one of the police who once stopped you on the border because your visa had expired.
You're right.
But since police in Sweden is quite friendly, so it felt like you met an old friend.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. And, yeah, my visa was expired or something. I didn't have a visa. I don't recall. But in any case, what happened was I saw as time went on, and I translated a book about the Estonia sinking, and I became very
involved. From Swedish to English?
Yeah, from Swedish to English. I realized that a modern state, a modern so-called democratic state, would allow, would facilitate the cover-up of the mass murder or terrorism in which mass murder occurred of their own people. Right. We're not talking about some Central European regime,
dictatorship,
what have you.
We're talking
about Sweden. Yeah. We're talking about one of the most modern, highly vaunted countries in the world, a country that's respected for openness, democracy.
For human rights.
Human rights, the Nobel Prize.
Negotiators.
All of this. And here we, and here they're covering up the mass murder of 852 people that happened in 1994.
Or even more.
And I thought to myself, I said, you know, that's the first time that I've seen that a state, a democratic state, will cover up mass murder of their own people. But then I recall the first time that I really felt that was in about 1982 when I first read the book about the USS Liberty by Mr. Ennis. He wrote a book called Assault on the USS Liberty, which came out in 1980. And in this book, he was the skipper on the ship or the first mate. He was a senior officer. He talks about this Israeli attack that occurred. The ship was about 13 miles off the coast of Egypt, off El Arish, in the Mediterranean Sea. It was in international waters by about a mile or a half a mile. And it was surveilled by Israeli military aircraft from like 6 o'clock in the morning. And then shortly after midday, while the officers and the crewmen are taking their afternoon sun bath, after lunch, the Israeli military aircraft come and fly over the plane and begin strafing the ship. And the ship is flying an American flag. And they killed about a dozen in these first attacks. And this military attack with these planes continued. And they began dropping napalm. And they were shooting cannon at the ship and bombs. And then some Israeli torpedo boats came by, and they fired like a half a dozen torpedoes. Only one of them hit, thank God. And that hit right on the starboard side midship, and it caused a 39-foot hole. And it entered the ship, caused a tremendous explosion right in the research area of the ship. This was a surveillance ship. This was a, like the USS Pueblo, it was a spy ship, a listening ship. An electronic vacuum cleaner, they called it. And it was there to pick up the messages going back and forth. And they had down below the waterline, they had a host of of Arabic experts, Arabic language experts, Russian language experts, and this Israeli attack killed 34 Americans.
But they were in international waters when this happened.
Precisely. And they had been surveilled and, was it, reconnoitered by the Israelis all day long, and the Americans felt that the Israelis knew they were there, had identified them, which they had, at 6 o'clock in the morning. And yet 6, 7, 8 hours later, then the Israelis come back and viciously attack the ship. Now, this has been a subject of books, and I, when I read that book, Ennis' book, back in 1981 or 82 when it came out, I was, my blood boiled, because I've always had a special place for the Navy. My uncle was a captain in the USS Navy, in the U.S. Navy, and I just couldn't believe that the U.S. government and the Navy would conspire to conceal the truth of this attack. And this has been the subject of a new piece in the Chicago Tribune of October 2nd of this year. The Chicago Tribune did a big article, and it says, new revelations in attack on American spy ship. Veterans' documents suggest U.S.-Israel didn't tell full story of deadly 67 attack. Well, now, with the passage of 40 years, the NSA has released these documents, and they're on the NSA website. And I've looked at them. There's a lot to be read there. But this article makes it very clear. They've sifted through it, and they've also contacted many of the crewmen. And what's amazing is that, like this one crewman says, the Israelis, they tried to lie their way out of it. But what the NSA documents show, most importantly, is that the Israelis attacked the U.S. vessel, knowing full well that it was an American-flagged military vessel, that it was a USS ship. It was the United States ship, Liberty. They knew that. They knew what its mission was. They knew that it was defenseless, virtually defenseless. It had a couple of machine guns, 50-caliber machine guns. And yet they attacked it. And when they attacked it, their orders were
to sink it.
To sink it and to kill every person on the ship.
No survivors.
No survivors. Now, I highly recommend that listeners go online and get this article. It's by Mr. Krusden. It's very good. It's from October 2nd, 2007. And
Chicago Tribune.
And it's been attacked by a lot of people. But it has some very good information from the NSA file, where the pilots, are asked, what vessel is it? And then they say, the pilot said, this is an American ship. Do you still want us to attack? And the ground control comes back and says, yes, follow orders. And I've read about Liberty for years, like I said, since 1980. But at the time, in 1967, in 1968, if you look back in the newspaper files from the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times, you will find very, very, very few articles about it, even very few mentions. It was not mentioned in the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune the following day or the next day or the next day. The first time it comes up is when there's a press conference with President Johnson, and he mentions it very, very briefly. Now, why this is important is because the military attack on the USS Liberty indicates that the state of Israel, in order to achieve its strategic goals, will and has attacked U.S. military targets and killed U.S. military personnel. Now, they've done it before. It happened in 1967. They killed 34 Americans and wounded 171 in this attack. That's more than 70% of the crew on the ship. At the time, Senator John McCain's father, was the head Navy commander in Europe. And he was in the position to have the inquiry and the naval inquiry was very, very narrow in scope, and there was never a question of looking at the at who did this and why the Israelis did this. Their only thing they looked at, for example, was how had the Americans responded to the attack. And that's a whole nother subject, you know, that Robert McNamara, I think he was Secretary of Defense at the time, when planes were sent from the aircraft carrier that was a few hundred miles to the west, these planes were sent to help USS Liberty from the attack, to fend off the attackers. And these planes were called back. Now, we're going to take a break here for a minute, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the USS Liberty and how this attack is very important, and understanding this attack is very important to understanding 9/11. So thank you very much, and come back for the next segment. Bye-bye. Close your eyes, don't wake up, don't get lost in the falling stars. Oh, is there a place on earth, someone you're not sure? Broken wings, don't let them ride. It's a storm, but you still survive. It's gonna take a miracle, so we'll go around believing you. We'll save it then. Stay forever. Nobody knows how much I pray for you at night. Oh, because I'm hello again. It's Christopher Bolin. It's the 27th of October, and this is our second audio file. This is the last segment that we're going to do. When I left off, we were talking about the USS Liberty and the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty in 1967, and how it is important to understand this attack and the way the U.S. military covered it up, and the U.S. government covered it up, and the U.S. media covered it up. Today, the USS Liberty, the attack on the USS Liberty, is a very sore point because it has not been properly investigated. And if the USS Liberty, attack on the USS Liberty by the Israelis in 1967 had been properly responded to, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in today. The proper response would have been a military response, would have been to retaliate against the Israeli military in Tel Aviv and Haifa for their attack on the USS Liberty. Obviously, the Soviets would have done that. The Israelis would have done that. If the Israelis are attacked by Katyusha missiles or rockets coming from the Gaza Strip, they go back and they paste the source of the attack, whether it's the Palestinians launching missiles or some guys in Lebanon. If we had done what the Israelis would have done, we would have responded proportionally to the place of the attack, the source of the attack, to the Tel Aviv military headquarters or what have you. That would have put the Israelis in their place, would have taught them that you don't attack U.S. military targets and get away with it, and that we're not going to take it. But they didn't do that. President Johnson and Robert McNamara didn't want to do that. They didn't want to embarrass a U.S. ally. I ask you, what kind of ally attacks your ships after identifying them as being yours and then tries to kill every man on board? Well, like I said, this would be in my forthcoming article. I discuss the USS Liberty because the people that were involved in that attack, let's take, for example, the commander of the Israeli Air Force, Mordechai Fein, or also known as Motti Hood, Commander Motti Hood. He was the Israeli Air Force commander. He was the one who was in the authority to send those planes to the attack after the ship had been identified as American. Well, Mordechai Fein, also known as Motti Hood, is another kibbutznik from the Sea of Galilee. He's from Degania, the same place I think that Yitzhak Rabin is from. Or was it Moshe Dayan? Moshe Dayan, I think, is from. I get them all confused. But it's interesting. Yitzhak Rabin, who was, I think he was at a very high defense position at that time. I might be wrong. His father used to live in Chicago. I found that in my research. His father came from Grodno or someplace in Poland and went to America. And he lived in America, in Chicago, for like 10 years. And then they had a different name, of course. But this attack and the people that were involved in it, we're talking about also Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres had a very high position in the same party as Moshe Dayan, who was with Rabin, was involved in the whole driving of the war. Mordechai Hod, Moti Hod, became one of the big founders of the Israeli aircraft industry. He became the president for, served as a long time. He was the commander of the Israeli Air Force for a decade or so. And then, of course, Ariel Sharon. Ariel Sharon was leading the armored column through Gaza. And, there's some question in the Israeli media as to whether the order to attack the USS Liberty came from a senior commander in the Sinai, which would have been Ariel Sharon. And one of the things that I haven't confirmed this, but I know that there have been reports that there was a massacre of Egyptian prisoners of war going on in Gaza, near Gaza, Khan Yunis, someplace in Gaza, and that Ariel Sharon's men were busy slaughtering hundreds of Egyptian prisoners that they had taken. So, but then, of course, there's the question, the strategic reasons why Israel attacked the USS Liberty is not the most important thing. The most important thing is to understand that the Israelis
are capable
and willing to attack their ally to achieve their strategic goals.
And that they have this audacity to do that.
Precisely. And that if you take these same characters that I just told you about, Mordechai Hod, Shimon Peres, Ariel Sharon, they were all in senior positions and have been in senior positions in the new Israeli state, in this Israel that has been created since the Likud came to power. And this is not the Israel that Israelis want or need, I dare say, because most Israelis want peace, like most Americans want peace. But this clique that has ruled Israel for the past 20 years is very dangerous, obviously, not only for the Israelis, but for the Americans.
For the whole world.
And for world peace. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and there will be more about the USS Liberty and this in my forthcoming article, which will be the second article in the Solving 911 series. It's a research article, so it's longer, and there's a lot of material there, and it's... I'm making it available to people who support me. If they want to get a copy of the article when it's done, they should send a donation through PayPal to my website. What are the email addresses they should send it to?
Bolin@bolinbooks.com or shop@bolinbooks.com.
And they can on my website there's a page they can go to.
Right, there's a donation button, yellow donation button.
Uh-huh.
And
is that under About Bolin? Or?
It's under About Bolin, but also if you go to the very first index page,
okay.
When you press on Home,
yeah.
Then you'll see that.
Okay. Now, there's this other thing that David Ray Griffin sent me this.
Right.
He has some questions about this. Popular Mechanics is at it again. Popular Mechanics has come out with a piece about investigating 9/11 myths and frequently asked questions. And... I'll finish up this audio with this one question. They at the end of the article, they say, is Popular Mechanics staffer Benjamin Chertoff a cousin of Michael Chertoff, Secretary of Department of Homeland Security? Now, I posted a little piece about Michael Chertoff on Rumor Mill News yesterday and on my website, too. Michael Chertoff is key in the covering up of 9/11. He was, the piece I wrote was Michael Chertoff the Israeli, proof of his childhood in Israel. Now, Chertoff is a very unusual name. Michael Chertoff is a very unusual man. He is an Israeli national. He is the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, which means he is responsible for the Palace Guard. He's responsible for the Coast Guard. He's responsible for the men who protect the President of the United States, Secret Service. He's responsible for the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, which now has a new name. He's responsible for Transportation Security Agency. These are these guys walking around the airport with this TSA jacket on. He's responsible for all these things. He's responsible for all these things that don't work. He was prior to, however, in year 2001 until 2003, he was the Assistant Attorney General under John Ashcroft. More importantly, he was the supervisor of the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice, which is to say he was the director of the director of the FBI. And the FBI director, who was brand new at the time, his name was Robert S. Mueller. I think it's Robert Swan Mueller III. He only became the FBI director 1 week before 9/11. So I've spoken to Sheratov's people before Sheratov was the man overseeing this FBI investigation. Now, if you know anything about the 9/11 investigation, you know the FBI has been the source of the obstruction of justice. The FBI has been the confiscator of evidence. Now,
but Sheratov is also the co-author of the USA Patriot Act.
Exactly. With who was his? Who was
Viet Dinh?
Yeah, a Vietnamese guy.
And this significant document was published on October 26, 2001.
Yeah.
Just a month and a half after 9/11.
The USA Patriot Act, of course, is an acronym, and it means nothing about patriotism. He also advised the CIA about torture techniques. He was the head of the Justice Department's criminal division, and he advised the CIA on the legality of torture techniques in coercive interrogation, like what they do at Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib.
But many other prisons which are secret.
Most importantly, I say, how can an Israeli national, his mother was an Israeli hostess on LL, she's originally from Czechoslovakia or Poland, but she went to Palestine. She was the first hostess with LL Airlines, which is a Israeli military Mossad operation, has always been. And she was involved in Operation Magic Carpet, in which LL planes and other planes were used to airlift Yemenite Jews and Iraqi Jews to Palestine, to Israel. Now, the question is, though, we only have a few minutes. This person, the people at Popular Mechanics are saying that about this Benjamin Sheratov. And since I'm the person who brought this information out in the first place, I just want to very briefly explain how it happened. When this article came out in Popular Mechanics about debunking 9/11, I read the article and looked at the very end at who wrote it. And the first name there was Benjamin Sheratov. Well, I said, son of a gun. You know, that's a very unusual name. So I checked him out a little bit, and I found that this was a very young guy. I mean, he was just out of high school when 9/11 happened. He went to school at Pelham, New York, which is just north of New York City. And, you know, I looked around, and I found that his mother was like single. She was a single parent, you know, when he was in high school, and that she changed her name. She married somebody named Tom Dargon, I think, and her name was Judy Dargon. But she didn't change her phone number. When she changed names, she still lived in Pelham. So I called her up. First, I spoke to her husband, Tom.
Yeah, but the thing is that all your research you were doing in your local library.
Of course.
And your library, you were lucky because the library had an old phone book.
Right, right.
So you have no other sources but public sources, phone books and records.
Well, that's how I do my research. I'm not privy to any secrets. I looked in an old Westchester County phone book, and I looked up this by number, I think it was, Judy Dargon, and I found her number, and I called her up. And first her husband, I spoke to him, and he was somewhat skeptical and protective and reluctant to talk. But, you know, I rode my bike a little bit in the wintertime, and I thought, and then I said, well, I'll go back and try again. So I called again, and she answered the phone. And like I said, I was doing this all from my local library. And I spoke to her, and I said, hello, Mrs. Dargon. I said, are you the mother of Benjamin Sheratov? And she said, yes. I said, well, I read his article, I said, in Popular Mechanics. I said, it's very good. And I said, you know, by the way, is he related to the famous Michael Sheratov, you know, from Washington? And she said, sure. She said, they're cousins. And I got a little bit more information. But then this Tom came to the phone, and he took the phone from her, and he gave me something of a tongue-lashing and said that I told you not to call back. But, I mean, I had wanted to speak to Mrs. Dargon, not him.
Right.
And that's Benjamin Sheratov's mother. And she told me that they're cousins. And all I ever did is I reported it as such, and that this is what I was told.
Here in the new Popular Mechanics article, they say that it appears that they could be distant relatives, and mm-hmm. and these Chertovs have never met each other.
Okay.
You know, but if Judy Dargan told you in a very happy tone that, oh, yes, they're cousins, you know,
Now, the thing
that
is,
means
of course,
something.
Of course, that the relation is through her former husband, who I think may be Larry Chertoff. I saw in my previous article I had mentioned Larry Chertoff, and I know that he's been apart from the family for a while. But the Chertoff family, Chertoff is a very uncommon name. And Michael Chertoff's family originally came from Belarus or wherever they're, Lithuania, that area, which changes, you know, titles. And they came to Cleveland. And Michael Chertoff's grandfather started in Cleveland. But other members of the family came to New York. Now, the thing is that there are not very many Chertoffs in the family. And I've been doing some research to try and find out exactly what this relationship is. And what's interesting is that there's another Chertoff who's very much involved in supplying Israel with weapons in the 1950s. And that's George Julius Chertoff from New York City. And that information about how the Chertoff family has been involved in supporting the State of Israel since the 1940s and before. For example, Michael Chertoff's father first went to Palestine in the 1930s as a young man with his father. And his mother and his sister and his uncles, they all went there. For them, Palestine, Israel, is their home. And that has to be understood. So what I found, you know, I wanted to put this information out there on the internet that Michael Chertoff was in Palestine, was in Israel the first time as a 3-year-old boy with his mother and father. So that takes care of all the material for this audio file. If you're interested in reading my material or hearing more audio files, please make a donation, if you will. Via PayPal to shop at Bolin Books or bolin@bolinbooks.com, and we will do a third audio file. This article is wrapping up. It's the second one in the Solving 911 series, and as I said, I will be sending it to supporters and donors to my research. Anything else?
And we encourage you to send us email and tell us what you think of these articles and these audio files. We're very happy to hear from you. And then write to this email address, feedback@bolin.com.
Right. So thank you very much. I look forward to doing this again.
And we look forward to hearing from you.
Right. Thank you very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Strength to carry on.